Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
I know that Brooke, you just said that he's being a Sundari, but I was like, I totally heard it as he's being incendiary.
I can see that too. Maybe not tonight, right now, but I've listened to some Thursday shows. I can see that a little.
What about Sundari?
He seems like you could set him on fire.
Yeah. he seems
flammable.
We set Jacob on fire. He's like, this is fine.
Yeah. Could he be sun-dried, though? That's what I'm thinking. Maybe
sun-dried Jacob.
But you really don't want me, like, you know, trying to get my tan on, because that means I have to take off a shirt.
Sometimes desperate times call for desperate measures.
Like now, because it's the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe.
And this is not Purnell's proudest fab.
No.
Yeah, that's right. No. You hear Jacob on an odd-numbered episode. Jacob is here. He is filling in for Tim this week. But we also have Purnell and Chris and Brooke. So how's everyone but Jacob doing?
Really good.
Do you want the truth or the lie?
Truth. How are you doing, man?
So I traveled.
How'd that go?
I went out of town. And take a guess at what happened.
You got sick?
Yeah, I'm hearing your throat, dude.
Yeah, buddy.
And I'm thinking
it's the good old Seuss COVID, I believe. I want to get the test tomorrow.
No, 100%.
Heard it to you last week through the show.
But what irks me about it is the fact that, like, so I went to visit some friends and we went to different places. And of course, I had to go through the airports and everything, right? So, as you all likely know already, everybody thinks none of this shit's happening anymore. No big whoop, nothing's happening. So I don't want to think about or try or care anymore. So, as a result, more often than not, the only mask-wearing person was me. Now, I get it for the most part. I don't judge people or anything like that. Do what you want.
I do. I judge everyone.
Yeah.
Oh, let me rephrase that. I try not to. I hate a lot of things and a lot of people.
I hate a lot of people too. Wow. We have a lot in common.
Yeah, see? We like video games. Do you like grapefruit?
No.
Oh, fuck. We had a thing going here, Jim. But like, you go to the airport and like nobody's wearing a mask there. Nobody's bothering. Hell, people start even washing their fucking hands in the bathroom.
And
so I just found it hilarious that, I mean, keep in mind, I already know how masks are supposed to work, as in it's about keeping droplets in more so than keeping droplets out, since you can get on your hands and then transfer it in whatever way you do, right? But the proper way for it to work is to keep it in your mouth if you got it. So I was wearing a mask the whole freaking time. When my dad picked me up from the airport, I put on two just because I know he wasn't comfortable with coming to the airport to get me. So nobody I was in contact with got it from me. But I somehow got it from some rutabaga, likely at the airport. And best of all, 2 days before that, I also got food poisoning.
That sucks.
I'm a barrel of good luck. I ordered a catfish sandwich at a bar. On the pod, it was to see, I saw a good band. I saw Knights of the Round play. And
wait,
I also
did you say
saw
a catfish a sandwich or a cactus sandwich?
I want to try a cactus sandwich because that sounds like it could be very interesting. If you saute that fucker, slice into a nice thin sheet. anyway, I digress. I saw Knights of the Round, and I saw Playing with Power, and they were great. I'm hoping to get both of them on the show, or someone from both of them on the show at some point, just to talk about stuff because they were good. I've had Knights of the Round on before, but I want to get them on again because they're good dudes. But yeah, all in all, for the most part, I had a fun week. I got to see a lot of good friends and all that. And I honestly don't regret it. I don't regret going out. I just regret people being fucking idiots and just, you know, I don't even understand sometimes. It's like, I am okay And I mean, I'm sure people listening to this right now could be like, what a sack of shit this guy is. And I'm fine with that. I accept it. But
you're our sack of shit, and we love you.
Oh, shucks. But like I always feel like I get there's times where you're like, you know what? I don't want to wear a mask because this is a scenario where I want to be comfortable with people I'm with. Like, say, for example, you're at a bar eating at a table or something. You know, that's a risk you take, you know. I want to not wear a mask here and enjoy myself. If you are, I don't know, working out in a closed quartered space by yourself or something, you know, maybe you don't want to do that unless you have a plastic insert or something. Okay, I get it. That's a risk you're willing to take. But I don't understand the need to just not bother at, like, the airport or at a Target or anywhere. I just never understood it. I don't get it. But, end of the day, I am thankful at least that I have been pretty good. If anything, the food poisoning hit me harder than this is hitting me right now. The food poisoning,
I couldn't sleep. I don't know if I should say that's good or, like, how do you properly say that? Like, oh, it's good that you have COVID that's not as bad as how bad you were shitting yourself. Like, I don't know how to word that positively.
Well, I mean, it exactly as it sounds, really. I mean, like, you hear about COVID even 2 years after the fact, and for some people, it's a death sentence. For other people, it's just poor breathing. Other people, it's quote-unquote just like the flu. So, for me, having never gotten it before, I didn't know what to expect for myself. I mean, I've got my shots and all that shit, so my expectation, quote-unquote, would be a mild case because, you know, I already built up a little bit, even though most of those have probably worn off by now because it's been like 6 months since my last shot. But, nonetheless, I expected it to be worse than it was, but it turned out that apparently food poisoning still takes the cake as being a pain in my goddamn ass for how it affects me. Yes, it was a pain in the ass. I was at Mitsua trying to force a puke, and I couldn't do it. But my stomach sure tried, and I got a stomach cramp that kicked my ass in public. Imagine that for fun. Like, have you ever, I mean, this might be TMI if it is, so I'm going to say, shut up. But have you ever been in a situation where you see a vomit coming? Like, I gotta let this go. But you're not in a good place to do it. So you got to move to a place where you can do it. But there's not a good place anywhere you go. So your body's doing what it's going to do, but you can't let it. So you're just like trying to find the exit. Like I was in a place called Mitsua, and all the exits that they used to have available were all closed off now for whatever dumb reason. So I was running for doors.
That sounds like
doors closed.
A safety violation.
It was. Well, in the case of one of them, it was an emergency exit, so I could have opened it, but then I would have triggered an alarm, so not so good there. But then the second door was blocked off because they turned that freaking, like, double door exit room into a storage area for some fucking reason. So I had to run all the way around the building and go all through the grocery store, then run around the back of the building, get behind some bushes, and by that point, my body was like, nah, I'm just going to give you horrible stomach cramps, and it's going to stay in there. So it sucked. And all it took to make you get to that point was a bite of takoyaki. I didn't even swallow that shit. It was like, fuck. So that was all. But the positives were that concert. I got to go to Galloping Ghost, which, for those who don't know, it's probably the best arcade in the United States right now. It's a fantastic fucking place, I tell you what. I did that. I ended up seeing a bunch of my friends at what we call Reunion Con. It's a big, like, picnic we have once a year where we just all get together in the Midwest and just enjoy ourselves. So, you know, take the good, you take the bad, you take them both, and then you have COVID. How about you guys?
I'm still trying to process a message that Root Beer said in chat. I'll just read it. So apparently Joe has been on the new Dolly Parton diet. Looks like it works, too. It's really making Jolene.
All right.
I don't know how to take that. Like, it hurts
now
my soul.
Poisoning.
Yeah, I had to share it with everyone. Because I couldn't just...
Honestly, I just assumed that Root Beer was saying that you've got huge tits.
I do.
So,
you do. I was hoping he would just assume he just wanted an excuse to bring up Dolly Parton.
I've seen your boobs, Joe. They're huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So are yours, fatty.
Well, yeah, I know my boobs.
I mean, look at it this way. You can either be comfortable with them or you can spend 2 fucking years solely trying to get rid of them. So, I mean, if you're comfortable, smile about it.
You know, I usually have my hands resting on them when I'm playing games with the controller in my hand. Like, kind of like
really?
A shelf.
Yeah. On your boobs?
Or on my stomach. Depends on how I'm sitting.
I was so gonna say I'll rest it on my gut, but
yeah, depends on how I'm sitting. If I'm like up high, like if I don't know, sometimes
my man boobs are not big enough
might
to
be
do that.
Up high. I
got good news.
Ooh, you share.
Is it about your amazing show coming up?
Oh no, that's local to Austin, so that's, you know, that's not really a thing I need to advertise, but
you should.
My copy of Pocky and Rocky Reshrined finally got shipped.
Ooh.
I remember,
were you one of the people that got the the Play Asia one and not the domestic one?
No, I got the domestic one. I didn't know the difference.
Someone was telling me it was like a really weak difference. Like, they claim censorship, but I can't imagine censorship that I would give two hoots about in a damn Pocky and Rocky game. But
what would be censored in Pocky and Rocky?
Your guess is as good as mine. But
I don't know.
But like, I got the game too. That's why I was surprised. You're like, I finally got it. Like, I was worried that like there was like a shipping issue for a lot of people.
Yeah, there was for me. It got delayed by like 3 weeks or so.
Damn.
It was supposed to ship like a while ago, but that's all right. I mean, it's not like I don't have games to play.
Have you played that since you got it?
But yeah, I guess since we talked about that, I have a show coming up. I have a show coming up in Austin. My two of my bands are having their first in-person, non-virtual performance, including Super High Tops, which, you know, we've talked about before. It's my video game funk group.
Yes. Be cool. Proud of that shit.
Yeah.
I will be the guy who says it, and you can say, Pernell, I hate you all you want. It won't change a thing.
No, that's okay. It's a good group, and I'm proud of it.
Yes, my man. That's what I like to hear.
So speaking of games that Chris plays and things that Chris is doing, I went to a really cool stream last weekend. It was Chris's first stream of the top 100 games of all time from Nintendo Power Magazine as released in 1997. It was really cool.
Oh, Chris, you started.
It was awesome. Finally. We had a really good time, and Chris knows like way too much about video games. People were like in the Twitch chat being like, I'm scared. People were like, oh, I thought I knew about video games. This guy's freaking me out. Like, it was really cool. Who is that? I've been trying to remember, what was the name of that editor you talked about for the very first game?
Oh, okay. So, I talked about how in the Nintendo Power Top 100 list, which is the September 1997 issue of Nintendo Power, it's a legendary issue to people who were around at the time, and a lot of people kind of, you know, drooled over that list, as well as, you know, it had, like, the 100 best cheat codes and the 100 best GoldenEye ambushes, which I might try those when I'm actually playing that game. Anyway, the list itself is a little dubious. I mean, it already occupies a strange, you know, part of history, because it's Nintendo saying, here's the 100 best games of all time, but Ocarina of Time isn't out, you know, Pokemon is not out, so it's like,
actually answers my question then.
No, but those are all okay, because the timestamp and the company tell you that outright. Like, you know, you're playing Nintendo games from the 90s
mid-90s,
so.
Totally.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say to what Brooke was saying, just right quick, is that the one blurb that they, you know, they made a little blurb for every game that was on the list and explaining themselves. And they said the very tippity top of the list was Super Mario 64. And they said this is the one and only game that was a unanimous decision was to put Mario 64 at the top of the list. And I noted at the beginning of my stream that the senior editor, so this would be definitely like one of the 12 editors that worked on this list, was Leslie Swan, the senior editor of Nintendo Power at the time. And some folks would know that Leslie Swan was the voice, the American voice of Princess Peach in that very game.
Oh,
that's
so unanimous,
cool,
quote unquote.
Shit's rigged.
It was just trivia like that popping like the entire time, and I really like. I wanted to be there for Chris's first stream of the series because I, you know, he's my friend, and I think it's a legitimately cool project. But I selfishly also really wanted to see this game in action because I never got to play 64 growing up. I've never played on a 64. I didn't really have I didn't have anybody to like go to a friend's house and like play on anybody else's stuff. So until I became a teenager and bought a Game Boy Advance, I had like a Super Nintendo, and that was like as good as it got console wise for me. And that was awesome. That blew my mind, but like watching Chris play this and imagining Chris play it as a kid, like just really, really made me wish I could go back in time and give that to myself. What a cool game. It still looks awesome.
See, like I can't speak for everybody on that, but I 100% feel like 64 deserves that shot, especially for the time anyway, because so first point, my first job was to buy that console in that game. The second part was that I stand by my belief that it was the first like true like 3D platformer, and the controls were fucking solid. Like somebody might come along and say, "What about Gex Enter the Gecko?" And I'll say, "Shut up."
We don't talk about Gex Enter the Gecko.
that's a bunch of like 3DO owners, and they're always cranky. They're always going to say things like that.
Like even before the system came out, like when it was like a demo at Toys R Us, I would take the bus to Toys R Us, play the demo station until they kicked me out.
Nice.
And then do it again the next time I could get up there.
That's awesome.
So by the time the game itself came out, I had already gotten to the second Bowser level. Jeez. I was obsessed with that game. It was really freaking good. Like
I remember
even now, like
I remember when I was a kid, I got my hands on it at Blockbuster Video. Me and my buddy John, we were there. We saw the N64 in person with an actual controller hooked up and with Mario 64 playing, and we ran in figure eights for about 10 minutes. And that's
yes.
It.
Yeah,
it's totally warranted too. Because fucking yes.
Like, what the fuck is this? Unbelievable. Circles. This shit's crazy.
The pure hype for our age group for the Nintendo 64 is just, I don't know if it's been recreated.
The closest may have been the Wii, I think. Like, I know people hate on the Wii in general, but when it first came out...
No, people hate on the Wii U. The Wii's pretty cool.
Yeah,
Wii U was just a wreck, unfortunately, though I liked some of the games on it. It was kind of a wreck as far as like release the overall goes, but yeah, the Wii was also a phenomenon when that came out. So I feel like that's the closest that we got to that. Some might say something like maybe the PS2 specifically, but I don't think that's the same thing. PS2 was like, hey, there's a combination of like the PlayStation follow-up, and do you want a cheap DVD player? Because we got one for you. We had quite a few pre-orders that solely were buying it because they wanted a DVD player.
Yeah.
And it was like a stealth way to get their kids a present that was actually for the parent.
I worked at Best Buy when the PS3 came out. People legit were like, well, this PS3 is the same price as a Blu-ray player, so I'm just going to buy it.
Yeah.
If good games come out on it, I'll check them out.
That's something the Xbox One S did. It was one of the first 4K players out on the market. Even Sony didn't have the 4K drive in the redesigned PS4s, but Xbox threw it in the Xbox One S, and that helped drive 4Ks into people's houses.
Nice. Yeah, it's a, like, I think back on all those days, like, I feel like the hype train for new console releases is probably behind me at this point. The Switch may have been the finale for that. Don't quote me on that, because some freaking, like...
I mean, we're almost 2 years into the new consoles, and they're still sold out everywhere. So I think there's still hype around consoles.
No, I'm not saying for other people. I'm saying for me personally. Like, as far as console hype in general goes, that will never go away. The console wars will never go away. The fan bases will never shrink, even. Like,
the sad we fact that console state of, like, wars global will never poverty. Go away hurts.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. They will never top what we had. But, overall, they will not go away. But I look back on the days when we had them, and it made more sense, because for me, it was less about what system did what and more about, I only have enough money for this, so I'm going to talk about my system because I don't want to deal with FOMO. And then once I had access to other stuff, I liked everything because I didn't have to care. If you liked it, can I play it? oh, cool, worked for me. You know, and then it became about the games, but back then it was more about what I could afford. So that's where I found it. It says everybody was primarily like that, except for that one jackass kid at school. Was like, yeah, my parents love me and yours don't, so I got everything.
I have the Neo Geo. Fuck off. No one cares.
Yeah, we all knew that kid. Fucking Neo Geo kid.
I didn't know any Neo Geo kids. I'm so jealous.
Yo, don't be jealous. They had the biggest fucking egos.
They were dicks.
You know what, annoyed Neo Geo kid? Adult Neo Geo people is one thing, because they have full-time jobs, blah, blah, blah. But kids with Neo Geos, you just knew their parents were just like popping cash around like for days. For those who don't remember or don't know, Neo Geo games were running for $300 a piece back then.
And the system was like 800? Like,
you have like 7 or 8. So it was not a fleeting purchase. You bought that thing, that means you had cash to burn. Like, the most expensive console I got back then was the Turbo Duo, and it was my entire Christmas present and a portion of my birthday. Jeez. So, yeah, like, that thing was, and I cherish it.
That's the only classic system that I still, like, really, really want is a Turbo Duo.
Yeah, that thing's amazing. I spent years rebuilding it after I lent it to my uncle. One of the reasons why Pearl doesn't lend shit out anymore. Loaned the system to him. He let his dog ruin my AC at my power cable. And I had basically had to replace all the cables. I had to re-solder it all, like get the caps back on. And pretty much replace the laser, too. Like, I had to redo the entire fucking system, practically. God. But due to some
Johnny
good
Turbo would have shot that dog.
No. Never.
I don't loan things to Jacob anymore because I just get them back with dick prints on them.
Jesus Christ, Jacob, stop fucking the consoles.
All right, first off, I'm not fucking the consoles. Second, my wife and I like playing ring toss with all the old Xbox 360 discs. So she just tosses them on and we're like, oh man, it's a new record, 63.
64.
That's what we're trying to get to.
You but, fucking wish. 64.
What, discs?
Yeah.
Piled on top of each other.
Yes.
Nah.
You're stacking like a 10 pack.
A 10 pack. Yeah, maybe if it's cold.
Oh my god.
You know, one of my favorite things about Chris' stream that he's doing is he's collected physical copies of all 100 games on the list. That really blew my mind, you guys. I had to just save this question. I'm trying to do this in the straight face. But seriously, I wanted to ask Chris on the show, have you been like, has a part of you wanted to do this project and collect all 100 games and play all of them since you received that? Like, you were 15 when you got that
magazine? Yeah, totally. That's... it was kind of like the dream, right? To just own all the games.
That is true.
I mean, I didn't think like, oh, I'm actually going to go out and buy these, because in 1997, like, what could you do? There was, as soon as I started streaming, it's like I did think about like different lists and stuff like that. I played through 20 Super Nintendo games because they were listed on the Nintendo Power top they on their 20th anniversary issue in 2008 they did a bunch of like they did a top 20 for every system, and I looked through it and I was like, I own all but one of these Super Nintendo games, so I'm just gonna buy like the last one and then play through them. And then I did, and like while I was doing that, this is like 5 years ago, I was like, I really want to like go for the top 100. And so that's
awesome.
It was in my mind, but yeah.
The top 100's inside your mind. Leave it to me.
Yeah, I do own all 100 of the cartridges that are on that list. In fact,
that's nuts. Well,
I knew I owned Battletoads before, but I couldn't find it, so I just bought it again, and it arrived today. So yes, yeah, now it's currently in my possession.
Still understand that. Still blows my mind that Battletoads made that list. Oh my god!
It's a dubious list. I've said it. I will say time I stream.
No, I get it. I mean, but even for the era and all the games on the Nintendo consoles, like, I mean, I know there's like a diehard fan base for Battletoads, but you know my feelings on that damn game.
I will say I definitely made the joke when I found out that it was missing. I was like, I got to call GameStop.
But one positive, though, in general, is that at least you know in this endeavor, you won't have to worry about playing a dud. Like, I mean, even though there's like, you know,
are there any shitty games on the list?
That's what I'm saying. Like
Battletoads. Battletoads, yeah, no. yeah, I mean, I don't know because I don't know all 100 of these games. Some of these are going to be brand new to me. But there's some that I would argue are maybe more like were impressive as tech demos, like Faceball 2000 on the Game Boy.
I've actually heard a lot of good things about that game in execution.
Yeah, like it had smooth, it had like somewhat smooth 3D first person scrolling on the Game Boy, and you could link up 16 players if you had 16 people with Game Boys, 16 copies of the game, however many link cables. I think it was 8.
Yeah, they had the F-Zero, those F-Zero adapters, not F-Zero, but those freaking F1 racing adapters, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I this has never happened. It can't have happened. There's no possible way 16 people bought Faceball 2000 at any point.
Some giddy commuter.
I will say,
you should organize for MAGFest 20, set this up, like work on a panel of people who own a Game Boy and Facebook or Faceball.
Yeah,
Faceball 2000 and have the adapters and just get people together and make it happen. Like you might get 14, 15. If you cross your fingers, that 16th person might show up. But I think you should organize that for MAGFest.
Yeah,
I would go to that panel and watch.
I'll have to get a link cable myself, but I'm 2/3 of the way there because I do have a Game Boy and I do have Faceball 2000.
Nice.
I
want to ask one more question.
I was just gonna say I will report back years from now when I'm done with this list and let you know which of the games were crappy.
Sweet. Pernell, what's your other question?
In line with Brooke's questioning to Chris, you're under the hot light now, buddy.
gotcha.
What would you say? I heard you make a comment that a number of the games you bought for this list you haven't personally played. Are there any that you are particularly looking forward to playing for the first time on this stream?
Oh, hell yeah. All of them, really. But
what do you like? The peak guys.
Probably. So there's a couple that I'm really looking forward to because I've always wanted to play them and like I never had that push to like acquire them. One of them is Demon's Crest because I've played I played the other Gargoyles Quest games. Two of them are on the list, the Game Boy game and the Super Nintendo game. And I definitely am looking forward to that. I actually have never played Pilot Wing 64, but I have beaten the original Pilot Wing, so I would like to also try that. I got Shadowrun, which is one of the only Super Nintendo RPGs I haven't played, and I have a mouse. Apparently it works with the mouse. So
Interesting.
I think, yeah. I may have to check if that was the Genesis version or the Super Nintendo version.
I would wager Super, but just because of the whole Mario Paint mouse being a thing that existed, so...
Yeah, there were a lot of Super Nintendo games that used the mouse, surprisingly. And I have a laser mouse that Hyperkin put out for the Super Nintendo. So it's an aftermarket mouse that doesn't have like the ball that collects dust.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So you're going to be all kinds of riddled up with some entertainment to play. I'm looking forward to hearing about these things.
You know what I'm looking forward to hearing about?
What's that?
No! I mean, no.
Here it comes.
Review. people are wondering why Jacob's here. Yes, there's a reason. First game to talk about tonight is MX vs. ATV Legends, developed by Rainbow Studios, published by THQ Nordic, released June 28th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and PC for $39.99. Race your way to victory on bikes, ATVs, and UTVs in MX vs. ATV Legends, featuring massive new open environments plus a career mode that lets you experience all the risks and rewards of becoming a world-famous professional rider. Become an off-road racing legend in your own right. Your time is now. Pernell and Jacob, both of you, check this one out. Pernell talked a whole lot already, so Jacob, how about you start? What is this game?
Oh, okay. I figured Pernell was going to lead on this one.
Well, he just talked for like a half hour.
That's his fault, though. That is Pernell's thing.
Nonetheless, I'm with Joe. Get started.
Vroom, vroom, buddy.
All right. So, So in this one, first off, I'd like to say I love you, Milestone Italy. I love your games. However,
this is Rainbow Studios.
Shut up. Let me finish, Joe. Anyways, I love you guys. However, this is a much nicer introduction into motocross and similar sports. So that being said, this game has a functional tutorial that it kind of skips over what you're supposed to do. As long as you land in the right area, the game really doesn't care what's going on. And it also doesn't really care to educate you that much, but it's okay because you're just going to go around on the open terrain and just figure it all out on your own anyway. This one is, I mean, maybe it's because I had it set on easy, but then again, the ones that Milestone comes out, I always set it on easy as well. And this one, it guides you with a gentle hand, and it's fun. Like, I wouldn't even say it's more arcadey. It's just, I don't know. Feels right. And so,
I got to disagree with you. Because right out of the gate, I think the AI is BS. I think they ride near perfect races. They make jumps that you can't make.
Maybe you should get good, Scrub.
Maybe I should get good. Purnell, what do you think? How's the AI in the game?
I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of on board with Joe on this one.
I didn't really have an issue with the AI.
Well, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that I had a personal beef with it, but what he's describing, I'd say, is accurate.
I mean, I was still winning races, but the computer still was, like, for being on the easy setting, they were not playing easy. They were not playing fair. They would wipe me out.
I was playing on medium myself. I was on Captain Medium. And, I definitely saw times where the AI did some really dumb shit. Like, I watched the AI at one point cut across, a lane of traffic into, another zone, which I thought was hilarious. Don't know what triggered it to do that, but I digress. But aside from, the one-off bits like that, yeah, the AI typically runs fairly perfect laps. No matter what the difficulty is, I mean, I'm guessing maybe it may involve how aggressive they may play, or I mean, because if you're playing on ATVs, yeah, you're dealing with crowd control and mess, because if you're sharing a zone with an ATV, they can literally bump you off the road.
No,
not the same with those. With the MX bike, I mean, there's more likely a chance you'll all just kind of go tumbling together. Like, you're not likely to try to bump into each other. You'll just be like, whoops, crap, we both screwed up. ATVs, though, they have the weight behind them and four wheels. So the drivers are more likely to be able to say, I'm going to muscle you out, because it's less likely that I'm going to go off the track or flip over, rather, but I can send you off the track or screw up your lane. And then you have the freaking UTVs. Fuck that thing. I'm wagering that's how they're designed to drive, because despite having played a number of these kinds of games, I've never played one that had UTVs in it, or I just didn't drive one. But it feels like you're driving a balloon. Like, it's just, it gets lots of air, and when it hits the ground, it just kind of bounces right back up. Like, it's got a high shock power. It feels so weird to control the thing on an actual track. If you're driving around the free zones or whatever, it doesn't really matter. So you're just wee, hoppy poppy. But on an actual track, I feel like even the AI, you can clearly see them being like, whoa, easy peasy, just a little bit. You see it right then and there. It drives. It's like interesting to see them. Like,
so I've ridden in those before, because the family on my wife's side, they have a couple of those. I will agree with you, it felt lighter than normal, but to be honest, I thought that they were, I thought that they controlled pretty decently, and not, as I said, I don't want to call it arcadey, because it didn't feel arcadey, but
not arcadey.
It wasn't, it didn't feel realistic either. I thought it was a nice blend between the two.
Yeah, it was definitely a cross between the ATV and the MX. Like, if you combine the two in some way, you'd get the UTV vehicles in this game. Though, I definitely want to just hammer home, because I know we've touched on, it feels a little arcade. Da, da, da. I'm like, no, I got no arcadiness. Like, I mean, there were times where I felt like I was going fast or whatever, but this game definitely hits you hard on things like going off track. Like, if you're cutting a turn even slightly too close to the curb, oh, they're going to reset your ass. Like, there is no whoops-a-doodle, I just kind of cut off a little on that turn. Game's like, I don't give a damn. You're doing it over, and you probably lost a place in the process. So, like,
yeah, when you fall or when you screw up in this game, you drop a lot of places way too quick, and it's really hard to get back into it, which is my gripe with the AI. But I think one of the positives is the wide variety of gameplay, like you guys mentioned with the different vehicles, and Jacob, you mentioned the open world. In addition to the track races, there is, you know, open world maps that you can explore and fuck around in and find collectibles and other cool stuff like that. It does have the replayability there, and it keeps you coming back wanting to do more.
Yeah, I honestly enjoyed fucking around in the open world more than the races. I didn't mind the races. They were just fine. I mean, keep in mind, my difficulty was set to easy, so... Yeah. your mileage may vary with it, but my thing is that as much as I enjoyed the open world stuff, I also felt like the worlds weren't big enough. Like, honestly, like I wanted something closer to like Forza Horizon.
Yeah, for it. I think that's a bit too ambitious, but they finally did an open world. I think baby steps, will applaud them for that. I think step two would be, let me go through a goddamn fence. A wooden, shitty fence. Let me drive through the fucking thing.
Did you ever try hitting somebody?
No.
You hit them, and it's just like, you might as well just have smacked right into a rock. Like, if you're on the bike, you just go fucking flying like halfway across the screen. Lord. It is amazing. I uploaded it to
I'll have to look at your clips.
Xbox. Yeah, I took a couple of clips of, like, just absolutely ridiculous ragdoll physics that happen sometimes. But, yeah, I was pretty annoyed with, like, the fences and stuff like that, because it was just like, holy shit, like, if you're not going to, like, let the fences be destructible and, like, let me, like, have actual access to open, yeah, and, like, really explore it, then you need to have, like, friggin' ramps, like, all over the place. Like, yeah. You know, I want to recreate like the Steve McQueen, The Great Escape movie, but you know, instead I'm just running along like 5 miles of fence.
Yeah,
like,
speaking of issues with the game, I have three other really big issues with the game. One is pop in
the soundtrack.
Now the soundtrack is hit or miss.
I thought it was missable.
It's like, to each their own. I'm not gonna shit on the music. Yeah. There's no Nickelback.
I like the Bowling for Soup track.
But pop in is a big issue. I've run into a number of issues with scenery just popping in out of nowhere. Number two,
fence. Honestly, that's a huge issue with the fences, because it's just like, I'll think it looks like I've got a nice little meadow, and then you discover that nope, there's a fucking fence going halfway through it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Number two,
yeah, I agree with that.
Lack of rewind. It is 2022. All racing games have a rewind function. Am I missing it, or do they not have it?
I haven't seen it, but I'm not used to seeing rewind in like actual like career races, mind you, like exhibition, yeah. But not used to seeing it in a career.
Yeah, I don't see like I didn't see a rewind thing, but also, yeah, I don't know, I didn't miss it either.
I did when I would go flying and crashing into a ramp that the other guys would sail over perfectly because they can drive better than me. The lack of a rewind, I think, is a noticeable issue with this game. All racing games have rewind. Why does this one not have rewind?
I want to ask this because I want to make sure I understand exactly what you're referring to here. So
the feature that lets you rewind like 10, 20 seconds of the race and do it over.
Okay.
Like you could do in Forza, like you could do in Grid, like you could do in...
That's something you could do.
Other racing games, like other dirt bike games, have rewind features. The biggest issue for me,
button to reset.
Yeah, no, I'm talking about the actual like rewind the action and do it over.
Okay.
Yeah. Third and probably the biggest issue with this game is the goddamn load times. We have SSDs on these fuckers. Forza loads up in seconds, and I got to wait 30 seconds for a race in this game. No, come on, optimize this shit.
I thought the load times were a little bit longer than I expected. But my thing was actually during cinematics, there is stuttering. And I'm just like, this thing is downloaded into my hard drive. It's 2022. Why is there stuttering in your like little, you know, 30-second clip?
So yeah, those are my three issues. Do you guys have any other issues on top of those, or should we talk $40?
I'm okay with just talking. Oh, okay, go ahead.
No, I mean, you guys pretty much know. I was going to say is that I felt that the just to describe how the career itself works, it's kind of, you know, lackish. Like it just kind of goes like a week to week thing, where you just kind of
like you can make it go all the way up to like 190 weeks.
Oh no, if you wanted to. Out. I guess lengthy. And you can also go back and redo previous weeks if you didn't like your standing or whatnot, too. But, like, I mean, it's got events, but it's not... I didn't feel like it was particularly exciting. It was just more like, I'm going to do a race. I'm going to do a race. Not like, I'm in a career! You know, if that makes any sense. Like, it didn't quite have a career feel so much as just, I'm doing races, which is fine. Which is fine. It's just, it's called career. So, but you do need to do career in order to unlock more of the tracks to doing things like exhibition and whatnot, too.
Yep.
So,
which I mean is standard. But
well, $40 on this thing. What do you guys think?
For $40, I was okay with it. I found this to be more enjoyable than other entries into this genre,
like the Monster Energy stuff.
Yeah, like and the Moto GP X, whatever it's called. Yeah, like I thought this was a more accessible entry into that kind of stuff. Like, I mean, it still needs some polish, but I'm more okay with $40 on this one than other ones. If anything, I'd say at least try it.
For now,
I think I'm more of a try it in that regard too, because just worth noting, like, anytime you hear me talk about these games, just know that I always come and think I'm getting an arcade game, and then I end up not. It's not the developer's fault, mind you. That's my fault. But just like I went in with off expectations, I hope listeners are also hearing what we're saying, too. If you're looking for an arcade racer, this ain't it. Run away, not walk. No. But if you're looking for like a sim-ish type game with a little forgiving sometimes, but higher difficulties to say screw it, then I'd go with like a high-end and try it then for sure.
So it sounds like one of these vehicles, you're on the fence.
Son of a bitch.
We wish we could be on the fence. No, we're just driving into it repeatedly and then backing up.
I'm recording clips of how far I fly.
I waited so long to make that dumb joke.
I appreciate it. I'm glad you did make the joke.
I don't.
one other thing I do want to bring up is I think THQ ease up on the DLC a little bit. Like launch day, there were what, 7 different vehicle packs available for like $5 to $9 each, or like $3 to $8, something like that. There's already a track pack out that the season pass runs another $25. Like, come on. DLC is supposed to be stuff that you worked on after you shipped the game. Not stuff you cut to release separately. But that's a topic for another day. Jacob, that's it for you.
Woo!
But you don't want to hang out with us, Jacob? We could be friends.
He wants to be like Tim and go to sleep right after the first review. Night-night, Jacob.
No, I still have tweets from last week to do.
Yeah.
And you got work to do.
I also have to take out the garbage, so, yeah.
Himself.
Sounds like you're going to throw the trash over the fence.
Oh, my God. You brought it back.
I don't have a fence. So, no, that sounds like
you're
going to
go out and buy a fence.
Yeah, no defense. Are you? Shut up.
All right, Jacob, do you have any final words?
Chris, your jokes are, well, more... are better thought out than the rest, but God, are they awful.
That's okay. We're on different episodes per week, so you only have to put up with me today.
No, that's a mark of honor. Don't let him get to you.
Yeah, you made it. Do you have any final words, Jacob?
Barfig Nugan.
Aki's not here. She doesn't give a shit.
Well, somebody pretend to care, give a shit.
How dare you? Arctut Liebert, Jacob.
All right, next game to talk about is Beastie's Monster Trainer Puzzle RPG, developed and published by Roka Play, released July 1st on Switch and Steam for $14.99. Beastie's is a lovingly hand-drawn 2D monster trainer game with a turn-based puzzle combat where you take on the role of a beastie trainer. Chris and Brooke, both of you played this. Chris, how about you start? What is Beastie's Monster Trainer Puzzle RPG? Although I think the title kind of gives it away.
Yeah, I mean, that's it kind of it's one of those. It does what it says on the tin. It says everything on the tin. Okay, so yeah, this is a take on the monster capture and training type game that is was popularized by one series whose name escapes me. And in this one, it's a different take for sure. So you are. I forget the kid's name. It must be Jeff or something. Like, you play as, like, you don't even name your character. It's just, you got a boy that just gets thrown into this story and stuff. And
just pretend it's God of War and just call him Boy.
Boy. Boy.
Boy.
So, so as Boy, you actually look more like... Okay, so I'm going to describe, because... I was not expecting this, and this definitely threw me. So your character is like it's a face of a person on a piece of paper that is affixed to a little stand. It looks like the classic board game Guess Who. And yet, on this piece of paper is affixed real human bangs. The front part of the hair.
Animated for some reason. We don't have the money to make a character, so we made an animated board game piece. Sorry, I'm already mad. Sorry. Yeah. To you, Chris.
Okay. It's not really an animated board game. I mean, it is an animated board game piece, but the hair is separately animated and has bounce physics. And then there's a hat on top of the whole thing. And this character does not live in a world that can accommodate such a creature, such a violation of God's will.
I'm laughing so
much. he kind of tilts over and like kind of bounces on the little stand, just like somebody was just like taking their finger, you know, their thumb and finger, and just grabbing the little card and going doot 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 doot, and that's how your character moves. You either control him with a controller or point a mouse in the direction and right click to get him to move. So that's bothersome, but if you get right up on another character, you can click on some of them and talk to them. You have a hub town that you start off in with, you know, a person who sells items that you will need to capture monsters, somebody who will heal your monsters for free, and somebody who will heal your equipment for free. Because you'll be getting equipment that you use to collect resources, which can be then further made into other things, and you know, all in the name of getting your character into different places where you can fight and capture monsters. Now, it follows the same rules as other popular monster catching series, in that when you go into like tall grass, then you're going to run into like monsters. Some of the monsters are much higher level, so they're a bigger challenge. There's some scripted encounters where you can get even more powerful monsters, but they're kind of like boss fights. There's other people that when you run into them and you know, talk to them, then they will challenge you to monster fights. Now, here's the thing. Whereas some games might choose to make these monster fights an RPG where, you know, type battle where you choose like a move on a list and, you know, use, you know, hit the other thing, see how effective it is, you know, match elemental types against each other and all this stuff. Instead of doing the menu based thing, they have you play a game of Bejeweled, which is, you know, the popular panel swapping game that, you know, you match three and they disappear and then other things fall into place. You know, you have to, you know, your mom's played Bejeweled. Have her explain it to you.
Chris doesn't have time for this shit.
Yeah, exactly. I don't even want to name drop Pokemon and I'm over here having to explain Bejeweled.
Now, so it's, how does it play? Is it like move one tile at a time, or is it like slide columns?
Yes, it is move. It is swap two tiles and gotcha. See if they match three. It is exactly classic Bejeweled rules. Cool. And All of the colors will, if your monster is of a certain elemental affinity, like green, blue, red, purple, when you match them, this is Puzzle Quest rules now. Basically, I'm not even going to explain Puzzle Quest, because if you haven't played Puzzle Quest, then I don't even want to know you. just kidding. But seriously, go play Puzzle Quest. It's a much better game overall. But when you match up the colors, then it fills up the bar of your creature's elemental affinity, and then when it gets high enough, then they can use a special move that will do damage, heal themselves, do status effects, affect the thing in some way. And as you collect more monsters, then you can kind of build your team to kind of lean towards one kind of elemental affinity, or have them like kind of as a variety. You know, it actually does start to get kind of deep. But unlike Puzzle Quest, it's literally just these are tiles that, you know, fill up magic, and then these tiles over here will directly harm the other creature. You know, there's like the black and white tiles that if you match three or more, then your creature will attack the other creature for, you know, a swap of stats, you know, their attack versus their defense. And if you match more than three, then you get a free turn. This can be used by both yourself and the foe to very irritating efficiency, depending on how good you are at Bejeweled. But anyway, once you win the fight, then you get, you know, some gold and some powdered jewels that you can then like combine to form like experience crystals that you can level up your stats and your overall level on your creatures by talking to somebody in town. So that's the gameplay in a nutshell.
Brooke, what are your thoughts on it?
Handing it off. Yeah.
Well, you know what? So I haven't played Puzzle Quest. So that being said, not only am I dead to Chris now, but I have fun with this game. I liked it. This is a neat little game because it was novel to me. And Carrie watching it, he was like, this is like a less good Puzzle Quest. So that holds up. I could actually... Well, before I ask Chris a question, I do think this game's trying to be Pokemon. I think that's clear. And a little bit of maybe Stardew Valley or Littlewood or some shit like that, with like not a bunch of like real crafting, quote unquote, more of like light collecting and giving some stuff to a guy, maybe selling a couple items, but not a ton of that. The thing is, this game assumes you've played Pokemon. And in my opinion, even though it is a fun game and I liked it and it did exceed my expectations, I feel like it assumes you've played games like Pokemon and other games that it's curbing from a little too hard. I wish they wouldn't assume that, because I think this is exactly the kind of game that kids are going to stumble upon in an app store, hopefully, if they have a mobile release, which they really should with this type of game. Try for the first time. It's not like at the beginning of this game they're saying, hey, only play this game if you've run out of like Pokemon games and stuff like this and you need something else. I have a lot of complaints about the game, or just like questions of how and why decisions were made in the project of making this game. My very first question is the same Chris has: why are we doing this weird pogo stick board game piece, yet we're animating it? If we're cutting the budget there, like why do I see a beautiful animated reflection in the water of my board game piece? Like, we just put so much work into there. It feels like it's on purpose. And like, we put so much work into it that, like, I kind of have to assume it's just a stylistic choice. But it's confusing because I don't feel like any other part of the game feels like a board game or inspired by one. So it's a little weird. There are a lot of things in this game where, like, I don't know if Chris agrees with me, but a lot of it just doesn't kind of feel cohesive as the same project at some points. So I feel like it's built by different teams who kind of like weren't talking to each other. And I don't think this is a bad game at all. In fact, spoiler alert, I'm going to give it a buy it. I don't know if I'm allowed to do that, if Joe's going to be mad at me. But
no,
like,
you could do what you want. I don't give a shit.
I think it goes over the edge. I love the idea of a Pokemon-esque game that has a little village and some light collecting and crafting that changes up the mechanics in the minigame of the actual battling the Pokemon or whatever they are itself to give us something other than the turn-based party RPG thing we all know and love, but might be a little bit tired of, especially if the game's like not going to reinvent the wheel on anything, so to speak. Ooblets, a lot of games like Ooblets and other games have tried to do that. Ooblets tried to do it by trading Battle for the whole dance-off thing. I was looking forward to Ooblets for years. I followed them on Kickstarter. I supported them. I was really looking forward to it coming out. Waited years for it to come out because it looked really good. And I was underwhelmed. I barely played it. I like this game better than that game. I already played more of it than I played Ooblets, which is weird to say because I'm really not a match three guy. In fact, Joe will remember he tried to give me this game, and I'm like, hey, I'm not a match three guy. I don't want it. And then he gave it to Chris. He's like, hey, you want the other code? I'm like, all right, if Chris is playing, I'll give it a shot. So I was surprised. You know, I ended up really digging it, and I liked it more than the Princess Farmer game I had played before, which was technically my first match three game of all time. This isn't really something that I would buy, but it's definitely better than Ooblets, and if there's anybody listening to this that means something to, this could be a fun little game for you. It's like, if you play stuff like Seabeard and stuff that's trying to be Animal Crossing on a smaller scale that's not quite as interactive, like, it's kind of got that vibe to it. Let me see, scrolling through my notes here, skipping over some stuff Chris already said. Okay, so maybe this is just personal preference. I like that I'm giving this game a buy it, but I'm just complaining about it the whole time. I really did like it, but I'm wondering for Chris, like, is this just personal preference, or do I not like that they built a big, beautiful town full of huge buildings that I can't go into and filled it with people that I can't talk to or interact with at all? Are you able to interact with the people who are moving around on the PC? So yeah, I was wondering if that was just a Switch thing, but like we've got like 20 people in the town. I can talk to like 4 or 5 of them, and it's just weird. I kind of wonder
why are they there? What's the point?
It's one of those things. Like, the game opens up and it's got all these options, and I'm not expecting a shitload. But then when I kind of don't have the things I assume I have by looking at the game and being reminded about, like, it's a little frustrating. So you didn't have to let people down, is how I'm feeling. It's not like the game doesn't have enough value for the price it's asking for. It's just confusing.
It reminded me the fact that, like, you have this town where there's people walking around you just can't talk to unless they're important, is Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance. Because if you walk around in the town, like, there's villagers walking around this town, like, constantly, and there's all these other, like, houses, and you want to go in them, but you're only allowed in the places where you're going to get quests from, and only the people
which is just
inside
the tavern,
those
I think.
Buildings.
Yeah,
I think it's just the tavern, yeah. For the first part
of it. That's a good point. I thought that's what we were doing here, and I kind of kept waiting to get past the tutorial. I'm like, oh, now you can talk to other people. Now you can go in buildings, and it never happened. I get like 4 hours into the game, and I'm like, oh, man, I still haven't upgraded my pickaxe. I still can't talk to anybody. I guess it's not going to happen. Which, once again, like, that's not a deal breaker for me, but it's just a little strange considering the, you know, kind of the source material it's drawing from. Let me see. I really don't mind it at all when a game is so inspired by something they kind of just want to give you another version of it. I've said many times, I love Zelda Breath of the Wild, but I also love Genshin Impact, even though it's a direct ripoff. So I don't mind stuff like, this game is clearly trying to be Pokemon. Even the Pokeballs just look like stone Pokeballs. Like, it's not even like trying to be different than that. So I don't even feel like it's ripping me off or anything. But then again, like, it's assuming that I played Pokemon and the only reason I'm here is because I'm at a Pokemon game. So it's not telling me basic things like how to run from battle. Like, it tells me I can run from battle with a Y button. It doesn't tell me I have to hold down the Y button for 4 seconds to run from battle. So half the game, I just don't know that. Like,
yeah, there's a lot of holding the button down to do things with the controller. But with a mouse, you just click.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that. You know, I kept thinking about your experience on PC, and I kept thinking, like, oh, I'm really liking this game. I think this is a cool game. But I kept thinking, I don't think I'd like it if I got the Steam key for it. I think this makes an incredible mobile game, or like a Switch game that's affordable. Like, it kind of has that vibe to me. I don't know if I would be playing it if it's on the PC, honestly, but I think that this could make a shitload of money in an app store for sure. But yeah,
well, like, as far as I know, it's only Switch and Steam. I might be wrong. I didn't do any research at all because I am lazy as fuck and I'm scared of breaking my computer. So $15, what do you two think about this?
I actually really, really like it, and I'm gonna probably buy it on Switch myself. The thing is, like, I am a complete and total sucker for the Bejeweled style game if there's some other element. It's kind of like jazz. I can't stand it by itself, but if it's in other things, that's kind of cool.
Yes.
I'm starting to feel that way as well between this one and Princess Farmer. Like, I told Joe I don't like these games, but I think I do if there's something else going on. I gotta agree with you, and like, this game has brought me around to that, and if the game's fun enough to do that for me, it's notable even if I do have like 15 complaints.
But I will say, for that exact same price, you can have Puzzle Quest on the Switch, and really recommend you get it.
Dude, so my review notes end with, like, I think this is a buy it. I have all these wonderful things to say, but at the same time, here are some games that are the same price that you should probably play. It's not that I don't think it's worth the money. I just think, like, this is a game for when it's 10 p.m. on a Saturday night. I've been Googling games like Stardew Valley, games like Animal Crossing, and I played everything else, and I'm like, oh, cool, $14. I can play, like, I can get that vibe. Like, I think this game had a good vibe. I love the music. One last compliment I want to play is, like, I love the music in this game. I think it's really good. And the town, like, the first village, it's, like, crazy groovy. It is, like, if this song came on a lo-fi anime beats YouTube radio channel, I would be like, well, hell yeah, let's study.
I was totally thinking lo-fi beats to study, too. Thank you.
It's really good, and it's not like it's, like, it's kind of doing its own thing where I still feel like I'm in a village, and then, you know, when we get out of the town for the first time and it's sort of like, oh, dun dun dun, here's tall grass and Pokemon music. Like, it kind of sounds like Pokemon music, but it keeps that grooviness, and it's actually a really good track. So, like,
yeah, the soundtrack's really good.
It's great. Like, it is definitely, like, I kind of left it on all day in between, like, some work stuff I was doing, and I let the tracks jam out. And that's how I know that I got, like, a cool groovy soundtrack that can loop. I'll just do one final complaint, and then I swear I'm going to be done talking about this game. I want to bring it home to how Chris
real
began.
Real quick, Chris was saying that he would recommend Puzzle Quest for $15. I would say no, because it's been on sale for $7.50 multiple times. I would wait to get Puzzle Quest at $7.50, and maybe Beasties Now, or wait, I don't know.
Yeah.
What was the other thing you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to bring it home to what Chris said at the very beginning. You know, we play as a guy in this game, and he doesn't have a name. So just my one final complaint is, like, the resident girl gamer on the Tuesday show, why we got to be a guy? Like, I love Witcher 3 more than any game in the universe. Everybody knows that. If you give me a backstory and a reason that I'm a man, I'll be a man all day. But there's no reason for this crap. And don't tell me that you didn't want to design just two main characters because you animated the guy's hair so much. Okay, I'm really done now.
You know how much effort and work it takes to animate hair?
Just don't animate the hair. Just give me a girl that's not animated so I can be myself, because I'm just a boring piece anyway. I don't need beautiful flowing hair.
As somebody who IRL is a man all day, I don't need to be playing men in my video games either. So yeah, give us some choices, folks.
Come on. It's like, if this is like a shooty game, like, cool. But this is like a farmy Pokemon game. Let us be a girl. Read the room, you guys.
Yeah. All right. Well, moving on. Next game is Urukill, the Calumination Games, developed by Izangi Games, published by NIS America, released July 5th on Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $39.99. Accused of a horrific crime you didn't commit, you find yourself in Urukill Land, a mysterious amusement park filled with life-threatening attractions you must survive if you desire freedom. In addition to an in-depth story, Urukill also features shoot-'em-up gameplay by renowned developer G-Rev and online leaderboards, allowing players to see how they rank amongst the competition. Pernell, tell us about your time with Urukill.
As the Sizzle text mentions G-Rev, I guess I don't have to. I'll just say I know of them from an old 3DS game called Kokuga and also some Sneak on a Run Day, and that was why I was intrigued by this game. That and the weird premise, too. But the idea behind this game is that, just like Joe said, there are multiple characters. Wow, my voice is getting weird. Give me one second.
It's like you're sick. What's going on?
Yeah, the strangest thing, right? It's like I'm sick or something. But yeah, so you pretty much start out as one of a number of prisoners that are being transported to Urukill Land, a weird amusement park that, for all intents and purposes, doesn't really make a lot of sense when you start out the game, but that's neither here nor there, because the whole point is you want to find out by experiencing the story. Once you land, a few plot points get opened up, and then they establish the dichotomy of the game, which is that the prisoners get paired up with individuals called executioners, or referred to as executioners. They create quote-unquote teams. The purpose of the prisoners is that they all have, or for the most part have, really extensive prison sentences. And for the most part, they all claim they were framed for their crimes. So the gimmick is that if they can complete the, let's say, the attractions at Urukill Land, they will be given a full pardon for their crimes, regardless of whether or not they actually did the crime or not. One of those, like, weird shadowy cabal things, you know the deal. The executioners, on the other hand, is another story, because the executioners are there of their own free will. They choose to be there, And if they can complete the attractions on their end, they're given a super, like, some sort of, like, any kind of wish they could possibly want within reason. So, obviously, don't pull some crap like, I want a unicorn. Well, we have one over here. No, it has to be something that actually can be done. But they promised them this. Now, the other aspect to this dichotomy is the fact that, so, the executioners, at any time they want, can press a button that immediately kills their prisoners. Just flat out. So it creates a really interesting, like, dynamic where you have these individuals who may or may not give two craps about the prisoners that are on their quote-unquote team. And there's, like, this weird concern as the player character, because you always control prisoner, that you're concerned about whether or not you'll get killed or not for just something stupid you said or did. So the actual attraction that you kill land, though, which, again, are undertaken by the teams. I can't explain just what kind of attractions they are in general because that's a spoiler. But the attractions are meant to be dangerous, as in dangerous for the prisoners. The executioners is advertised that they're completely safe on the attractions, but the prisoners can die. So another level of danger. But this is a visual novel in this case, so you're not dodging flames or, you know, outrunning spears or anything like that. You're making choices, picking up items, solving environmental puzzles and that sort of thing. Though, I'm sure, like, Brooke, who's our resident, you know, visual novel person, as far as this, your games you typically play, I would speculate that the puzzles in this game are a lot lighter than those. They tend to give you less to look at in the room. So what I mean by that is, typically in a point-and-click visual novel, I assume that, or I'm used to, being able to pick on, like, every minute detail. Look at this cup. The cup says S-Y on it. What the hell does that mean? Must be a favorite concert or band or something. I don't know. Something like that. A lot of times it doesn't even involve in, you know, doing anything with the plot. It's just world-building and characterizing of the people. But in this game, they kind of drill down on the specific things you're able to touch on to, so you don't get caught lost in the weeds for the most part. In the environments you're exploring, they're not too big, and they don't really give you room to get lost in them. And then lastly, of course, is that when you do try to attempt puzzles, they have a generous three-hint system you can undertake where you can press a button, the game will give you a hint that gets progressively more revealing, I guess. It's a no penalty to take on, so you choose to do that. But if you decide you don't want to deal with it, you just want to solve them all and get on to the game, no penalty for doing so. So you pretty much go through these individual environments with the team that you are on at the time of the story. And then eventually something will occur. We'll call it a crescendo point in the narrative. And this will invoke what's essentially a shooter, a shmup, the G-Rep shmups. The prisoner will pilot pretty much a flying spaceship. And the executioner will pilot what's essentially the boss character for the stage. And as you're playing through the level, you'll be shooting down targets. You have a regular shot, and then you have a charge shot, which doesn't quite explain what it actually does. So each character's quote-unquote charge shot is different. But the way they work is, for example, the first guy you play as, that may be a spoiler in itself, I said the first guy, but it's small enough that it's not a big deal. His charge shot is, he has options that fly around the ship that when you fire your normal gun, they kind of fire off to the sides. But when you do the charge shot, the options come in, so it adds bullets to your main line of fire. So it's almost like a focus shot, really. But you're not actually charging a gun. So that's why I hate that they call it a charge shot. And other characters in the same way, their things function differently, multi-directional fire and stuff like that. There's also a sort of like resonance bomb and a resonance shot. As you collect shrapnel from or debris from the downed ships, which comes in the form of like actual scrap and like point numbers that actually fall down the screen that you catch, you increase this gauge. After 20%, you can drop execution shot, which is like just a powerful blast forward, or an execution bomb, which drops like a small explosion around your character, kind of like a clear some bullets away and get out of jail free card move. But if you can get to 100% and do the execution bomb, it's pretty much a screen clear that can pretty much wreck bosses and everything. And there's an interesting risk versus reward there, because you might find yourself thinking, this boss sucks. I want to bring him 100% up to him and let it off when I can. But if you die, it immediately tanks. Like, you lose pretty much all of your charge. So it's, and the shooting is not, I would say it's not even easy. In my I will say, all right, I chose hell difficulty because I'm a glutton for punishment. But I did, for the sake of testing this, scale it back to normal too. And aside from giving you more lives that you can possibly get, which I'll have to actually explain how you get lives, the game is still pretty much, I didn't notice much of a difference in bullet patterns and stuff. I know easy has a thing where, like, it gives you a sort of like one hit shield if you're like not getting hit constantly, so it's more forgiving on taking bullets. But from what I could tell, the bullets were generally pretty aggressive when the bosses were up, for sure, regardless of the difficulty. I played on normal or hell. But to divert back to the comment I made about lives. Oh, that cat is precious.
She wants attention. I'm giving her attention during the show. Right, Coltrane?
Do you
love me?
You want,
okay.
You want to talk about you will kill Coltrane? So at the beginning of an actual shooter stage, there's a sequence the game makes you undergo. There's multiple little mini games you have to undertake in this game. I'm not going to get into all those, but this specific one is important to note because it determines your lives. So as your ship is going through, I guess the launch point, you'll be asked a series of questions. Those questions all relate to the case you just undertook in the visual novel section. For each answer you get correct, that adds lives to your actual total lives you'll get in the shooter section. So get a perfect score, you'll get the max level number of lives you'll get for that run. And you can also find one hidden one-up in every stage. Each shmup section has three stages to it. So you'll be engaging in that. If you get it wrong, don't feel bad if you're like, you know, screw this, I missed the question, I'm starting that damn section over because I need the max number of lives. They're pretty generous about just letting you do that section over again, but still kind of nice just to get you, you know, familiar with the beats of the story in case you forgot some, maybe because you saved the game, you know, between sections or something like that. But what I will say overall about this game is that I found the shooter sections to be fun. On one hand, and I mean, I've had this kind of chat with Chris in the past regarding shooters, I can say that I would be the guy who was like, I wish there was more like different power-ups and not the typical collect the P to get more bullets for your main gun, which this game pretty much does. But I also know that is a general staple for a lot of good shmups. So I'm not going to hold this game accountable for my personal gripe there, my personal preference. The gameplay itself in the shooter sections is 100% solid. I had fun with it. And it is a solid challenge. The bosses will spray the screen with bullets, and there is a mini game that happens during the boss battles where if you screw it up, I believe it takes three of your lives per fuck up. It's a knowledge-based thing, mind you. At least those aren't like bullet time. That's just, hey, you better be paying fucking attention because they're asking you a question. And though you're not being timed, you better get it right or you're going to suffer. So, like, the boss battles are pretty tense, at least in my opinion. I wish the puzzles, this last bit, though, I wish the environments were more complicated and the puzzles more complicated, especially with the hint system being, like, so gimme-gimme, they may as well just go all out on the complication of the puzzles. But I like the comment. I like the dialogue. I like the characters. The person they got the voice, Binko, who is like the Monokuma of this game, the MC or whatever. She is like the right level of demented for me. She's awesome. She wears like a freaking like weird like Kitsune Fox mask or whatever, and she makes funny facial expressions despite wearing the mask. You can kind of see them sometimes. She's really good. Her voice actress is great, and all the other voice actors are pretty good too. But she's like, she takes the cake. So I feel like in the end, this game, it's not going to blow you away with the plot, but I felt the plot was entertaining and I wanted to learn more about what the heck is going on with a fucking amusement. Oops, sorry. With an amusement park.
You're on SML. Say fuck.
Yeah, but I'm trying to be the rated G section of the show.
Fuck tonight.
You pronounce
that. Let's get Aki in here.
No, Aki, no. So, but at the end of the day, I feel like this game is entertaining and fun. So, I would give this a, well, yeah, do your thing, I guess.
$40, what's your verdict?
I personally think this is a buy it. Even if you play it one and done, it's a play it that you'll kind of feel like you got something out of it. You enjoyed yourself, so.
Cool, works for me. All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called 60 Words, developed and published by Lightwood Games, released June 28th on PS4 and PS5, 30th on the Switch, July 1st on Xbox for $7.99. This is a unique type of word search puzzle. There's no grid, no wrong letters, and no list of words to find. Each puzzle just contains 60 intertwined words connected by a theme. As players discover the words, they paint them with a rainbow of vibrant highlights to create a unique, often stunning result.
Unique.
Chris, tell us about 60 Words by Paugi.
Well, this is a unique... never mind. Okay, so...
Two in one intro. I love it.
Yeah, I know. It's so... I'm proud. The good pastor is strong with these folks. The copywriter here. So, yeah. It's been a while since I've actually talked about a Paugi game. Paugi, right?
Yep.
See, it's been a long time. So yeah, Paugi is like known for having really accessible and really fun, breezy kind of like word-based video games. Occasionally, I think maybe some math. I don't know.
I think they're just words.
Yeah, it's just mostly words.
Now you have me wondering.
I know. I've messed myself up now. I have so many puzzle games of the ilk on this Switch that I can't remember who does what. Anyway, well, what this does. It's 60 words and actually 60 word puzzles. You know, they got that in there. Each puzzle, so it's arranged like a word search. But we remember that the classic word search is a grid that forms a square or rectangle, wherein you seek out words and then circle them and, you know, keep going until you got the whole list done. In this one, the list is not provided ahead of time. It is instead a theme where you just kind of imagine what the words are. And the other thing is that it is not a grid of a square or rectangle. They let the words form the shape of the puzzle. So if there's like a real long word or something, you know, they don't contain it within the middle of the puzzle. They'll just let it go like out to the side and stuff like that. So, at first it's kind of just like random, you know, it just looks like, splotches, Rorschach test type of like shapes, that these words are forming, you know, just basically, like I said, a bunch of interconnected words thrown together and they form like this nebulous, you know, whatever. But actually, when you start getting into a little further into the puzzles, occasionally they actually will draw a picture with the actual thing. Like Face the Music, which is the sixth puzzle, actually forms a music note. So, you know, you've got like things like that going on too, which is kind of cool. And it is technically, for lack of a better word, unique. But it's also, it's not particularly hard if you're pretty good at word searches. Like I said, you know, it's, this might be my bias because I word puzzles are like word search puzzles I'm actually pretty darn good at, but I did try to like come at this with like, you know, well, let's see how fast I can do this, you know, and like, you know, trying to, do my best to kind of challenge myself with it. And yeah, it's just the words really pop out at you because, again, the words kind of create the puzzle. But at the same time, they end up with, like, because they don't have to limit themselves to, like, words that work together, they do actually expand the vocabulary a little bit. There's actually some of the food items, which, by the way, does contain the word pancakes. I just
checked. Take a screenshot.
I did, yeah. it actually, it contains, like, food items I'd never heard of, so I'm like, huh. So, but I didn't take a screenshot of them, so I can't back that up. So, yeah, you can learn some vocabulary from this here game. So, like, that's the puzzle of it. The other, like, things, of course, the only really other things to talk about on a Paugi game is gonna be the menu, like, what you have access to here, and, for one, of course, the interface to this game is both touchscreen and controller. Works much better with your fingers because you can just drag the little, you know, circle across, you know, just rake it across the letters, and it spells the word across the top of the screen as you're going, so you can kind of check yourself You don't have to be like, oh, did I, you know, run, go too far. It has music. I can't remember if it, I know these guys reuse music a lot. I can't tell if these are like the same themes as in other games, but it's pleasant music. But honestly, this is the kind of thing that you play while you're like listening to a quality podcast or the SML podcast. We got dark mode, so we can change the background to dark and the letters to white, or vice versa. You can also
we got dark mode. We got Aki.
Exactly. And you can also actually create your own custom palettes, because it basically cycles through like different colors. I think 8 different colors for the different circles that you draw. Unless you tell it not to, you can tell it to just do one color, and you can customize those colors with an RGB slider. So that's actually pretty nice. You can just create your own. Like it's literally like, well, we're just gonna do as much as we can with the options here, because you know the game itself is so, you know, it is what it is as far as that goes.
Now it's only $8. What do you think?
Yeah, I think this is a worthwhile one. I think that like classic word search, like puzzle fans might seek out their more classic, you know, word search puzzle type games, but it, like I said, it's very accessible. It's maybe there are some like much harder ones. I should have like tried like level 50 through 60 or something instead of going from the beginning. But like I found it a little bit easy, but it's certainly a great way to pass the time. And like I said, you also get rewarded between rounds with some forehead slappy puns.
Yay!
I want to share one with you because I don't want to give you too much, because you know that otherwise they're not going to sell their game. Or I mean, it's like it's a treat for people who play the game rather.
Yeah.
Oh, and I also want to say that there is a stage called Dem Bones, and the shape of it is a skull.
Nice. So
that's kind of cool. Kind of badass.
So the pun.
Actually, I'm going to give you the pun, but I changed my mind on which pun. I'm going to do the, because there's
you
one
just
I
give
like.
Us two.
No, I can. Okay, so there's a stage called A Little Green. Oh, by the way, you get to like, if you go back to a stage that you completed, you can get the pun again. You don't have to wait to beat it again. Okay, so here's the pun for level 2. My doctor told me I should eat more green food, so I started to diet.
Oh, it's really good. I love it.
That's terrible. I love it. So good.
Yeah, Palgi are great. They're great at the puns. Like, if one can be great at the puns. Okay, I'll give you a second one. This one is for a puzzle having to do with like days of the week, month, year, whatever. Invisible calendars, something you don't see every day. Hold for
I'm just gonna admit it. I don't get it. I'm sorry.
Something you don't see every day, an invisible calendar.
Oh my god, I feel so stupid.
Yeah. On that note, that is it for this episode. Chris, you ruined it for all of us.
Hold for rapturous applause.
I don't have that, but if Carnage is around, he should raid us. We could hear our new raid notice.
Oh yeah.
It's courtesy of Jacob. I don't know if anyone's going to, but
I see him.
Come on, Carnage, you can do it. God damn it, I'm gonna have to play it on my own. Thanks, Carnage. Here it is.
Fall into the abyss of my gaping butthole.